You know, there are a few of us who don't feel from time to time that we need a little bit of assurance from, does my bum look big in this, or am I on the right track in life? Do you really love me? A couple of quick words of reassurance. Most of us are on our way again, but for some people, the need for reassurance can become quite addictive. Tonight, we thought we'd explore the idea of reassurance and why we seek it and what happens when we find that we can't face a day without it. Dr. Russ Harris is a psychotherapist and author of books including The Happiness Trap and The Reality Slap, and we welcome him back to the nightlife. Evening, Russ.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Let's define reassurance to start with tonight. What is it that we seek when we ask for it?
Well, generally we're feeling a sense of uncertainty or anxiety, and what we do is turn to someone to confirm for us that we're okay, or we're on the right track, or we're doing the right thing. So reassurance is really a way of reducing our anxiety levels.
Is asking for reassurance of itself a problem? After all, as you say, we do it from time to time.
No, I think you can think of reassurance as being like drinking wine. You know, if you drink a glass of wine a night, it's actually quite good for you. But if you drink a bottle of wine a night, it's very bad for you. So, you know, a little bit of reassurance is a good thing. It's healthy in a relationship. You know, the examples you gave, do you love me? Or turning to a mentor and saying, am I on the right track here? But if it becomes excessive, if we're doing it all the time, it will actually feed our anxiety and undermine our self-confidence, and it will actually make life a lot harder for us.
Russ, do we ask it for sometimes because we have a gut feeling that something is wrong in a relationship, for example, or that our backside really does look big in the jeans that we're wearing?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously it varies enormously, and you know, so your anxiety levels will determine how much reassurance you seek, and this is where the vicious cycle comes in, because as soon as I get reassurance, my anxiety goes down. You know, is my bum too big? My husband says, no, it's beautiful. Anxiety goes down. Am I on the right track? My boss says, no, this is great. Anxiety goes down. So it's like an instant way of reducing uncomfortable feelings.
Sure. I guess at times we actually don't realize that other people are seeking our approval and reassurance. You know, is there a way you can actually provide it in a healthy manner?
Well, look, again, it all depends, but certainly, you know, if you're a boss and you had an employee that was continually coming and asking, you know, is this okay? Am I doing okay? As a boss, you might choose to coach that employee and say, well, what do you think? Have a look at that. How does that compare to your previous experience? If you were, you know, looking at these results from someone else, what would you say? And maybe encourage this person to build up some sense of confidence in their own decisions. And you could also do that to a relationship where you're, you know, I've got to be careful here as I start talking about relationships. But, you know, if your partner was continually seeking reassurance about her looks or his looks or his appearance or her body, then you might ask them, you know, what do you think? And, you know, if the roles were reversed, if you had a friend who was looking like this, what kind of things would you be thinking and saying to them?
Russ, you say that there comes a point where reassurance becomes addictive for some people. At what point do you see that starting to happen?
Well, I guess you can tell if you're addicted to reassurance because you find it very hard to take action on any big important issue or to make any important decisions without having to get information from others. If you're finding that you're constantly having to get others to check or approve or give their opinion and agree with you before you can move forward on some important area of your life, then you're probably addicted.
I mean, can this sort of addiction strike any of us, or does it particularly afflict people with low self-confidence and, you know, no confidence in their own decision-making process?
Well, it's a kind of a chicken and egg thing that happens there. You know, the more I seek reassurance before I make decisions, the more I start to lose confidence in my own ability to make decisions. So, you know, it's hard to know which comes first, but certainly one of the pathways to developing genuine confidence, if you don't have it, One of the things you need to stop doing is seeking reassurance. You need to cut back on that and start learning how to tolerate, or better still, accept feelings of anxiety and the anxiety that goes with uncertainty. You can't know for a fact in a challenging situation what the outcome will be, or that you're doing the right thing. So,
yeah. Russ, at times I guess it can almost be paralyzing, isn't it? You know, you can't do a thing until you have a committee meeting, you know?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And, you know, the flip side is when it comes into medical issues, like hypochondria, someone suffering from hypochondria has a lot of concern and anxiety about illness in the body, and may turn to a whole range of health professionals, typically doctors, but any number of health professionals, to get reassurance that they're okay. And that can lead to all sorts of tests and multiple visits to all manner of health professionals. And they'll get short-term reduction of their anxiety when the helping professional says you're fine, there's nothing wrong, but it won't last, and they'll, you know, this vicious cycle ramps up.
If we spend hours trawling the internet for diseases that fit our suspected symptoms, is that part of the confirm mechanism as well?
Yeah, well, yeah, funny you should say that, because there can be a sort of reassurance in, oh, I know what it is now, but of course that soon then leads to more anxiety. You know, is that really what it is? And if it is, what's going to happen? And patients like this can be very challenging for doctors when they come back week after week after week, because actually, if you do enough tests on anybody, sooner or later, you're going to find something abnormal in the test. This is because all medical tests are averages. And so people can end up going down this pathway of incredible investigations and tests, and can actually end up making themselves sick when they weren't in the first place.
Also, just the fact that you having a test in the first place is a little bit concerning, because obviously you have the test and then you've got to wait 4 or 5 days for the results to come back, which can be a bit racking.
Yeah, absolutely. So, if you think in terms of any addiction, what all addictions have in common, whether we're talking drugs or alcohol or gambling, in this case, reassurance seeking, what happens is all in the short term give you some relief from painful feelings. They all give you a sense of relief, make you feel good in the short term. But they all in the long term actually lead to an increase or rebound in those difficult feelings that are being avoided, and usually make life harder as a result.
I guess we also have to be a little bit careful here too, because we see plenty of people who suffer symptoms and never get checked, for only discover later that they really should have gone along to the doctor. You know, I mean, that male reluctance to go to a doctor is legendary, and it's sometimes, you know, we talk ourselves, oh, I'll be fine, you know,
yeah, yeah.
And then you know, by the time you do go, it's become something a bit more serious.
Yeah, well, you know, that's probably a different way of avoiding anxiety. You know, I don't like the anxiety of going to the doctor and having my bits prodded and poked around. Men are much less comfortable with that than women. And so I'll avoid the doctor and I'll pretend everything okay. So it's kind of the flip side of the same issue of avoiding uncomfortable feelings.
What about obsessive compulsive disorder? Does that also have a close relationship with that reassurance seeking? No, that you can't leave a room unless you've touched every knob on every door.
Yeah, very much. I mean, the compulsive rituals in OCD provide a reduction in anxiety. You know, initially, in the short term, I think my hands are dirty. I feel anxious. I wash my hands enough times. Those feelings of anxiety and those thoughts of contagion or illness disappear for the short term. So there's short term relief. But then there's this rebound effect. So this week I have to wash my hands 20 times. Next week I have to wash my hands 25 times to get the same effect, to reduce that anxiety, to push those anxious thoughts and feelings away. Some people with OCD incorporate other people into their rituals. You know, one client who would you know, often be afraid when he was driving that he'd driven over someone or hit someone with his car, and he'd get the passenger to get out of the car and have a look behind and make sure that he hadn't run over or hit anybody. You know, another client, she made life very difficult for her children because she would repeatedly ask them questions, and she would they would have to give her the exact words in the exact order to reassure her that everything was okay. And if they didn't get the words right or they gave it in the wrong order, she'd ask them the question again, which was very distressing for them.
Mm. I have to say that I have a friend who has, I think he's sort of probably overreacted to, you know, all of the messages that we keep getting about germs in the environment, and, you know, is hyper-conscious of you know, having clean hands and you know, constantly going back to the bathroom and cleansing again, you know. So, I mean, we do live in a world of germs. It's sort of something we have to, you know, in common, and, you know, sometimes you've got to get used to it.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, we are living in a culture of fear where the media bombard us with scare stories all the time, and nothing spreads as fast as bad news. Unfortunately, they're you know, part of this new culture of sterility and cleanliness is actually leading to an increase in conditions like asthma and eczema in kids, because they're not actually getting exposed to enough dirt in their environment to build up their immune system.
Yeah, absolutely. It can also, I guess, be a real drain on a relationship if you have somebody who constantly needs that reassurance. You know, your loved ones are likely to run out of patience after a while if they have to constantly give you the nod that you're going in the right way.
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, it can that can go in intimate relationships between partners or between parents and children or work relationships. It puts a huge strain on a relationship, you know, if you are constantly seeking reassurance. It becomes irritating. It becomes, you know, and it ramps up through this kind of this vicious cycle. You know, obviously the flip side is if you've got a partner that never gives you reassurance ever, then that's not really very healthy in a relationship either. You know, so I mean, a little bit of reassurance is a good thing. It says to your partner or to your friend or to your workmate, you know, I care about you, and, you know, I'm willing to make some time here to kind of look over you and see you right. So again, it's about finding that balance.
Mm. Let's have a look at treatments. What is acceptance and commitment therapy all about, and can people use it?
Well, so acceptance and commitment therapy, more commonly abbreviated as ACT, is a special type of mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy, and the title reflects one of the key themes in the model: accept what is out of your personal control and commit to action that improves your life. And, you know, ACT can be very effective for any sort of anxiety condition. Reassurance seeking is just one manifestation of people that struggle with anxiety. And it particularly uses a set of skills called mindfulness skills to help people deal with their anxiety more effectively.
How can mindfulness help you cope with anxiety and uncertainty? How does that work?
Well, so mindfulness is a special mental state of awareness and openness and focus. And in a state of mindfulness, you can allow difficult thoughts and feelings to flow through you without getting caught up in them, without getting overwhelmed by them, without getting into a fight with them, without struggling with them. It's just it's sort of a state in which difficult or anxious thoughts and feelings, well, actually any thoughts and feelings, can really just flow easily through you. So when it comes to things like reassurance seeking, it's kind of three sorts of things you need to target. One is uncomfortable sensations in the body. Prior to seeking reassurance, if you check with your body, what you're going to notice is a racing heart or some sweaty hands or knots in your stomach or tension in your muscles. You're going to notice some kind of anxious sensations in your body. And you know, when you get the reassurance, you'll notice they almost instantly disappear. So we need to learn how to allow those feelings to be there without having to rush desperately to do something to make them go away. The second thing we need to learn to do is what in the ACT model we call urge surfing. You can think of an urge as being like a wave. It rises, reaches a peak, and then comes back down again. But what we need to do is learn how to surf the urge, not resist the urge. If you resist a wave, you get dumped, but to surf it, let it kind of rise, reach a peak and come away. So if you've been doing a lot of reassurance seeking, just like any addictive habit, if you start trying to break that habit, you're initially going to feel very strong urges to do more of it. Mindfulness enables us to kind of step back and notice the urge and let it come and go without acting on it. Yeah. And then the third piece of this is learning how to unhook ourselves from difficult thoughts. You know, when we're trying to break this habit, our mind is going to try and talk us into doing it. Just get some reassurance. Just do it one more time. You can start breaking this habit tomorrow. But for now, just kind of go and ask him or go and ask her. And learning how to unhook ourselves from those thoughts, let those thoughts come and go without acting on them.
We're talking to somebody over the weekend about this particular person was going for a job interview this week and said to me, you know, look, I'm really nervous about it because it's one of those things where I desperately need the work and, you know, I really have got it. So it was building up a lot of angst about the interview before it actually happened. And it is remarkable, you know, if you, well, don't need the job and, you know, you're fairly confident about yourself, you invariably go pretty well. But if you're a bundle of nerves, it does tend to, you know, disable you to a degree.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing. There's this great paradox that the more we struggle with and try to, you know, get rid of the anxiety or the nerves or the tension, whatever you call it, actually the bigger it gets. So there's this paradoxical stuff when we practice mindfulness and we just allow the anxiety to be there. It actually it reduces. If you track symptoms for any anxiety disorder with using acceptance and commitment therapy and its mindfulness-based approach, you see the symptoms of the anxiety go down. Down and down and down. But at no point in therapy are we actually trying to avoid it or get rid of it. We just learn this new way of responding to it, just letting it flow through us. And paradoxically, it reduces as a result.
Mm. Russ, how easy is it to get it through to people who may have an addiction to reassurance that their attitude is a bit unhealthy? A lot of people would probably think that they don't have an issue to deal with.
Look, it varies enormously. Some people are very aware of it. They know full well that, you know, certainly if you've got hypochondriasis, it would be unusual if you didn't realize that you were spending a lot of time seeking reassurance from medical professionals. Some people may be unaware of it, but most people start to get feedback from people around them that they're, you know, and this may just be irritation, or it may just be people avoiding them, or it may just be people saying, "Oh, stop worrying about it." You know, if you're getting a lot of messages like that from people around you, they seem short or snappy, or they're telling you to stop worrying about it, or if they start saying, "Here we go with this again," then you know that you're doing too much reassurance seeking. Again, though, you know, you want to watch for the person that never gives any reassurance. You want to watch for the male who kind of at the slightest bit of reassurance seeking from his partner says, "Oh, well, she's pretty high maintenance." You know, high maintenance is a term that can be misused.
Mm. It's one of those awkward situations, you know, if you are in a workplace, for example, where you don't get a great deal of reassurance, you know, you're desperately looking for it and, you know, it's, you know, blank wall, you could, I guess, go slightly insane because of it, you know, you would certainly be constantly worried.
Yeah, look, absolutely. If you don't get any at all in a work situation or in an intimate relationship, then that's not going to be healthy. You know, like reassurance in moderation sends a message that I care about you, I'm looking after you, and how you go is important to me.
What should you do if a friend or a colleague that you're aware of seems to need reassurance all the time and it's, you know, heading towards the extreme and, you know, you can almost see the accident about to happen?
Ooh, well, first of all, take a long, slow, deep breath and think very carefully about how you're going to handle it. And when you do approach the issue, you know, come from a space of real compassion. You know, the danger is that we come from a space of frustration or irritation, but that is not going to be very helpful. So kind of see if you can just put yourself in the shoes of the other person, get a sense of here is someone who is really struggling with anxiety. They're racked with uncertainty and anxiety. They don't have very good skills for handling it, and they're struggling. And then from that compassionate space, kind of talk to them and perhaps start with a question. Have you noticed how often you ask me about X, Y, and Z? Have you noticed how often you come to me and check my opinions? And see how much self-awareness they have.
Mm. Quite often, unfortunately, when you perceive yourself to have a problem, you will react to the problem all the time. You know, for example, perhaps you've got a blemish relating to acne, and you find you touching it all the time and making it worse and making it red and the like. And sometimes it's a difficult thing to break.
Look, definitely. And I think if you've got a well-established habit of reassurance seeking, it's every bit as hard to break as a well-established habit of alcoholism or drug addiction. You know, no one's saying it's easy. And so these mindfulness skills definitely require practice. But they're well worth learning to do because, you know, life is painful. We're all going to experience painful, uncomfortable feelings, and learning how to accept them can make a huge difference.
Just wondering whether you'd like to join us tonight. My guest in studio tonight is psychotherapist Dr. Russ Harris, and the author of a number of books, The Happiness Trap and The Reality Slap. We're talking tonight a little bit about reassurance and the fact that, you know, some people do need it. As part of their makeup, you know, they are constantly seeking to be supported. And as we've suggested, sometimes it can make life in general very difficult indeed. Your whole decision-making process can atrophy as a result of the fact that, you know, you just don't trust your feeling and constantly need to be reassured. Perhaps it's one of those situations that you've observed yourself. Perhaps it's something that is in your makeup, and you kind of know it's a problem, but you find it really difficult to deal with. Or perhaps you have dealt with it, and you've come out the other side and are feeling much better about the situation. If you would like to talk about it tonight, we'd love to talk to you. As we said, Dr. Harris has written about this extensively, and if you would like to join us, we'd love to talk to you.
Across Australia, it's Nightlife with Tony Delroy. It's Nightlife.
It is 20 minutes to the latest ABC news, and we have Monday Night Football result, North Queensland Cowboys over the St. George Illawarra Dragons, 32-22. Bad news for the Dragons because that basically closes out their season. No chance of making the eight now. With us in studio tonight is Dr. Russ Harris, a psychotherapist, and we're talking tonight about the issue of reassurance seeking and the fact that sometimes it is difficult to deal with someone who just constantly needs to be given an assurance that, what they're doing is the right thing. Let's talk about it tonight. Dennis, you wanted to talk about how the pace of life has increased.
New Zealand, I've just taken a life change myself, and the pace of life has put a lot of pressure on the community, and I've just noticed that people don't have time for life these days. Life is very busy, and it's just increased the amount of anxiety.
So you're saying that the reassurance is often part of the reason why, you know, people are struggling with, you know, everyday life now.
Exactly. And people do need external reassurance. Because they don't get much in work. You know, work is a lot less secure than what it used to be. Life is a lot less predictable than what it used to be.
Hmm. Russ, is it part of the loss of the womb to tomb job?
I'm sorry, is it part of...
You know, part of the fact that we don't have the womb to tomb job anymore, and that, everybody's looking to the bottom line.
Oh, look, for sure. I mean, if there's instability in the workplace, you're obviously going to be wanting reassurance about your job and your future, and that you're. Sometimes the people that employ you can't give you that reassurance. You know, if you're part of a big organization and that's going down or suffering in the global financial crisis, then who can effectively reassure you in those situations? There is no reassurance, and that's when we really need to learn how to handle our own anxiety.
That's a very good point. And particularly having strong support networks outside of work.
Yeah, that's very important.
So it is one of those things where you need to, if you're not getting it from one source, find another way of getting reassurance.
Yeah, well, one of the things, as you develop mindfulness skills, you actually find a sense of deep reassurance that comes from within yourself, just a sense of whatever arises, I can handle it, no matter how difficult it gets. I have resources within me that will enable me to come through this.
Dennis, thanks so much for the call. Matthew, you actually work in the medical profession, and you find expectations a bit strange at times.
I found that, over time, the patient expectations have grown, and so, it often leads me to seek reassurance from my employer to check whether this treatment plan or this approach with this patient is going to be the best and how to manage this situation. And so I've noticed the reassurance trend in myself has generally increased, where I would have expected that it would decrease with experience. So.
Russ?
Yeah, it's I can relate to it. You know, it's the profession's becoming so litigious now, and there is that need to check. And everyone in the Western world working in the medical profession is feeling the demands and the pressures of that. But again, you know, it's like how much reassurance is helpful, and at what point does it start to become unhelpful?
Yeah, that's right.
Matthew, how do you deal with someone who, you know, is never happy with the outcome?
It's often you just end up referring to a specialist.
Yeah. So. It's one of those things where, you know, you'd think, if you get the good news that there doesn't seem to be a problem, they still have doubts and need to, it leads apparently to a lot of doctor shopping.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, initially you need to take an approach of empathising with the situation and taking every step you can to try and make them happy. But you know, ultimately, there are some patients who you just can't make everyone happy all the time. So that's one of those things.
Mm. I mean, is there any technique that you use? I mean, we've been talking about mindfulness here, to try and give them confidence going forward, or it's almost a lost cause in some cases.
The stress is often more within myself. So I find that sometimes I take the approach of, well, do I need to stress about this now, or can I put that off until a later time and be concerned about that then? Patients, if they get upset about a particular treatment or approach that's occurred, then you can discuss that with them, explain the situation, empathise with their concerns, and beyond that, if you can't make them happy, then you've done everything you can to do so, then you really just have to refer them onto a specialist or things there.
Have a lot of them already pre-diagnosed themselves by, searching on the World Wide Web?
A lot of patients are quite informed from the internet, and so in some ways that helps, because you're not introducing something that's new, that they're concerned about, they're already relatively well informed. The only concern is they can sometimes get misinformed from information that's not necessarily true or correct on the internet. So then you sort of, who do they trust?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Russ, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, it's been 10 years since I practiced as a medical practitioner. I just do psychotherapy these days, but all of those issues are still very fresh in my memory. And one of the things I used to find particularly challenging was people who read literature about the dangers of vaccines, and there's all sorts of stuff on the internet about vaccines poisoning kids and so forth. And it's almost impossible to reassure people when they've read and believed and bought into all of this scary stuff. The other thing is, you know, in medicine, there's actually virtually no certainty in anything. You know, like you go to have an operation with the greatest surgeon in the world, you have to sign a consent form acknowledging all the risks of the operation. Mm. Same for any drug, any treatment. There is no certainty.
Mm. Yeah. Very true.
As a matter of fact, a friend of mine, a little story, a friend of mine was going in for heart surgery, and somebody who had heart surgery about 6 months, 12 months earlier, sort of said, oh, you've got a great doctor, you know, he's, you know, considered to be, you know, the top one or two in the profession. And the guy had to drop out with the operation 3 days to go because he couldn't do it, and his assistant had to take it over. And he started to get conniptions because, you know, wow. He had number two.
Oh, no. Terrible.
Actually, you just raised another point that I find that as an approach that helps to minimise some of those problems that patients have when they've got some other sort of trusted advisor, be it the internet or a friend or family member. And over time, you tend to come across some of the objections, and so confronting those objections up front can help in terms of reassuring them that they can trust you, and that you do know what you're talking about, and you've already experienced those things and crossed those bridges before. So that can help reassure them to a certain degree as well.
Russ?
Yeah, sure. Mm. Absolutely.
Yep. 1-300-800-222 is the number. 1-300-800-222. Rick, you say you can't have a limit on reassurance.
Basically, yes, and I used the example to your producer, Tony, of a small animal, a small dog, and anybody will instinctively, I think, reassure that if it's afraid and scared, and I think, basically, humans are very similar. I think throughout our life, at times, we need reassurance. You know, with children, with grandchildren, you need to be able to reassure them that what they believe, what they want to do, is the right thing.
Mm. Russ?
Yeah, look, in moderation, absolutely. It's only a problem when it's excessive. It's like, you know, come back to the wine analogy. Glass of wine a night is good for you. Bottle of wine a night, not good for you. A friend of mine was at last week. He's got a beautiful little boy, Dexter. He's 4. Dexter comes out of his bedroom, and his mum says, go back to bed, this is mummy and daddy time. And Dexter says, mummy, you don't love me. And his mum says, of course I love you, and now go back to bed. You know, so that was perfectly good reassurance. The kid was feeling a little upset. But, you know, if Dexter at age 40, every time he has a fight with his wife, says, you don't love me, that's, you know, a problem.
How about if Dexter makes a decision that goes wrong? Do you abandon him, or do you try in some way comfort and reassure him?
Oh, definitely the latter. You know, it only becomes a problem if someone becomes paralyzed. They can't make any decisions. They need constant reassurance that I'm getting the right thing. Then you actually start to feed the cycle in the same. You actually make it worse. If someone can't make decisions or move forward without getting your opinion and your approval, then each time you give it, you actually keep them more and more stuck.
I would argue that at times all of us need reassurance about decisions that we make. And I'm not saying that it's constant. I'm saying it may occur, you know, once every 3 or 4 years or something like that. But
there's no argument there. I agree with that.
Okay. Well,
it's all about moderation. Reassurance seeking is only a problem when it becomes excessive, and I would define excessive as creating problems in your life, interfering with your relationships, undermining your confidence, making it harder and harder for you to take action on important areas of your life.
Do we not all go through phases of this at some stage?
Sure.
Do you go through life and say, well, you know, I am constantly right. Everything I do is correct and right. I'm sorry, I don't.
No. I mean, that would be like taking a teetotal position and saying that wine is totally bad and you should never have it. All in moderation. You know, a little bit of reassurance that it's a good thing. Reassurance at the right time is a good thing. It's an important part of relationships. It's an important part of communicating that I love you and I care for you, as I've actually been saying throughout this kind of talk.
Mm. Yeah. Sorry, I got into it late, and it appears to be a medical side of it.
Well, it's where you need reassurance all the time. You know, in other words, you find that you just can't even make a decision simply without a committee meeting, you know?
Yeah, right. And you're talking about the present government, of course.
Could be so. Thanks, Rick. Bill, you say that the pace has been changing since the dawn of time. Your parents didn't know, for example, about the lunar landing.
No, that wasn't even conceived of. I was at a conference some years ago when occ health and safety laws were being changed to the awful rate of knots, and the keynote speaker was Dr. Peter from the Victoria Police, and it was about to change because the laws were changing every 6 months, and he's talking about what my children know now, what I didn't even dream of. The pace of society today is just unbelievable. Technology changes rapidly. And he got to the end of it, and we're all nodding sagely and wisely, and quite an age spread in the room. But he got to the end of the talk and said, that was the Argus, 1894. And it's people, changes change, and people want to get comfort zones. It's like the gentleman before talking about wanting to reassure the little dog. The little dog doesn't see himself or herself as a little dog. It is the human wanting to pet this little funny creature and be all nice about it. And that's a form of self-reassurance, that I can approach an animal. I'm giving him my reassurance. But in what I'm really doing, I wouldn't go up to a Doberman and say, oh, what a cute doggy type of thing. And then you've got the internet. People, I have a friend who is a bit of a hypochondriac, and she gets onto the net and doesn't know where she's going. She's untrained, unqualified, but it is firmly convinced that what she's saying is correct. I'm an intensive care nurse, and it doesn't matter what I say. She will come back and say, the net said. And you're thinking, okay, enough.
How are you going to fight that? Yeah. You've only been in the medical profession for 30, 40 years. What would you know, you know?
Same with occ health and safety law. I did it for 25 years. Workers' Compensation Act, people have an outcome, a predetermined, especially in occ health, occ health and safety and compensation. They have a predetermined outcome in their mind, and that you cannot shake that belief, despite even having the law written out in front of them. They have this belief, I have an injury, I am getting compensation.
Yeah. Russ?
Yeah, I mean, people want certainty, and the anxiety of everyday life, with each generation, it definitely does get faster and faster and faster, and we struggle with it in so many different ways.
Mm. But our children adapt to it. They're growing with it. It's like, the old question, how do you program your VCR? Get a five-year-old.
Dead yep. set
yeah,
true.
So they're not uncomfortable with it. It's people medicalizing conditions within themselves to give them the basis for their anxieties they want to be. It may have multiple root causes, multiple answers.
For sure. I think people also, more and more want you to guarantee things. They want things guaranteed. They want, sometimes a client will say to me, can you guarantee this will work? Mm. And my reply is, if you ever go to any professional that guarantees it will work, then don't go back to them, because no one can make that guarantee. Anyone who makes that guarantee is either deluded or lying.
Absolutely. But people need to hear the guarantee, because everything comes with a guarantee now. Things didn't come with guarantees in the past. When you bought the kettle in 1900, good on you. Well done, you saved enough money and you looked after it. There wasn't a 2-year warranty on it. And even a mechanic can't guarantee that the noise is going to be exactly what he says it is.
Yeah. Bill, thank you so much for that. And I'm sorry to the other callers we're not going to get to tonight. We've been talking about reassurance seeking tonight. My guest, Dr. Russ Harris, psychotherapist and author of The Happiness Trap and The Reality Slap. And the book that we actually related to earlier was The Confidence Gap. That's still available?
Yeah, it is. And probably if any of your listeners are aware that they do too much reassurance seeking, by which I mean it is impacting on your life and your relationships, then that is the book they should look at out of all of them.
Russ, thanks for that.